So I think it's maybe particularly appropriate with a lot of, at least to me, new faces in our circle this morning to sincerely ask if anybody has any questions. And don't feel that your question might be too basic, too elementary. The disclaimer I often make, of course, is that I might not be able to answer your question. Maybe somebody else in the circle can. Maybe nobody can. But the important thing is to put the question out there to the universe. And some way, somehow, the question will, at some point, come, the answer will come back to you. But once again, questions this morning are appropriate. As you see, I'm very empty. I don't have my usual 3x5 cards or copy of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, or Eckhart Tolle's Stillness Speaks. Those my usual props aren't with me. So I come open to questions. Once again, all of us hopefully open to questions, and maybe there's some answers. That's the way Kobanoff ended it. He sometimes had a prepared talk, sometimes he could make a very worthwhile talk out of the questions that came forth from the group. So we'll see what happens this morning spontaneously and openly here. Any questions?
I've often heard that Coben said that he brought Zen here to America to introduce it, but that it was up to Americans to make it their own. In other words, to wean themselves from the Japanese cultural part of what Zen is. I assume that's what I'm hearing when I hear that. That Zen itself is beyond any culture. And yet, because he was Japanese, brought up Japanese, when he brought it here, he did it the Japanese style, and then said, the first part of the question is this, what I've heard, is that what he said? The second thing is, have we done that in these years? You know, it's not only since he brought it over, but even since he died, have we Americanized it?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I heard Coben say, and you know, he spoke for many years and many different practitioners. He didn't like the dichotomy between student and teacher, so I hesitate to say his students heard different things at different times. First of all, I don't think he would say that he brought Zen here. He wasn't by far the first Zen teacher from Japan to come here. Suzuki Roshi is often given that, at least in the Soto sect, given that the tribute or that fact that he was the first one to come. And then he invited Coben to come afterwards. And Katagiri Roshi, later became Roshi, both came and assisted Suzuki Roshi in bringing Zen, Soto Zen in particular, to the West. And Coben initially to help at Tassahara, and I think, I don't know, I never met Katagiri Roshi, but I don't know if he assisted Suzuki Roshi both in San Francisco and at Tassahara, or just in the city center. Do you know Joe
both,
more about
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
Both?
Mm-hmm.
Both, yeah. Joe definitely has more of a background in Soto Zen as they came to the city center and spent time there that I've really not spent. I've been a periodic short-term visitor to city center, but I pretty much stayed simply within Coben's circle of teaching, of practice places. What I recall him saying about Japanese way or American way was that he didn't come here to make us Buddhist, and he didn't come to make us practitioners of Zen. In fact, as I've said before, last words I heard him say were the ones I've just uttered at a meeting in Santa Cruz shortly before he moved to Colorado and then made that trip to Europe. But he said he came so that we would know who we are, you know, which is certainly not, as I see that, not something with cultural trappings to it. It's very universal. So it seems that my interpretation is that he didn't come here to make us Buddhist or to make us practitioners of Zen. Implied that we were free to find our way. Suzuki Roshi definitely said that we needed to find a way that was adapted to us, to who we are, we meaning students in the West. Coben was a master of ceremony and ritual, and he certainly was one of his strengths that he lent to Suzuki Roshi and the city center in Tassajara practice places. And he did it more there than he did in his own practice places. But still, he didn't encourage us not to practice some of the forms that he brought us. It just wasn't, it was much looser in his practice places, more flexible than at places that held more strictly to the Suzuki Roshi lineage. Personally, I'm, as far as I know, I'm not 100% sure this. I might have been the only one that he told me it was okay to wear my okesa, which is usually worn as Joe's wearing his in a traditional Japanese way, to wear mine over my shoulders, because I was inclined to take up the challenge of adapting the practice of Zen as he brought it here to what fit for me. So I don't know that we have done the prior, neither prior to his passing on or afterwards, there we have made many changes in what we've originally brought. Once again, his practice places, Jikoji, Hokoji, and I haven't been to his practice place in Colorado, and I've only visited the one in Switzerland a couple of times. I don't know them well enough to know if they practice in any less Japanese way than we do here at Jikoji, where I practiced until about the early 1990s, was down in Santa Cruz, where he established the Santa Cruz Zen Center, and then he gave that practice place over to Suzuki Roshi's lineage in the person of Catherine Thanis, and then it did once again become more traditionally Japanese than it had been during the years, the more or less 20 years since he established there in the early 70s till the early 90s. So it did take on, revert back to, you might say, if you want to talk about the Japanese way, did revert back a bit after he turned it over. Because he gave us latitude there to be less formal. So I don't have an enthusiastic sense that we've gone far in that sometimes referred to as the Americanization of Zen. And I've looked that up, I've Googled that, and there's quite a few hits on the Americanization of Zen. And there are other practice places that have gone a lot further than we have here, whether you see almost none of the robes and the rituals that I have. I've read about them. I haven't gone and practiced them. It's in one sense surprises me that I haven't, because I'm drawn to living that aspect of Zen practice more, yet I'm also sort of a very personally tied to Koban, and as Angie Boisevain, one of Koban's senior students, and you know, now she's Angie Boisevain Roshi, she explained to me when I was ordained that I was ordained to Koban, not to Zen, not to Soto Zen, not to Buddhism, but it was a personal connection made. It was a verification of a connection made between he and I. And so I haven't felt like I felt that was what she was saying. So I haven't wandered much from where he practiced, where he established practice, even though there's this temptation to follow a less Japanese, less traditional style of practice. Even the Rohatsu Sesshin that I loosely said to lead here in December every year, it's still based on a Japanese form. It wasn't one that Koban identified closely with, but his Zazen master Koto Zawaki and his lineage, Uchiyama Roshi, started that intensive sesshin. And I like that more. It's often referred to as the, quote, no toys, unquote, sesshin, because it has dropped a lot of the trappings, you might say, that came from, that are present in most of Zen practice in this country. So that's sesshin here. At least we do it here at Jikoji, and for the Rihatsu sesshin, it is done in other places at any time of the year. But you know, there's no service like we did this morning, no Dharma talks, which this is sort of what's loosely going on here. No chanting at mealtime, no dokusan, meetings between, once again loosely used, student and teacher. The so-called teacher faces the wall, just like everybody else. There's less of a dichotomy, duality between the student and teacher. So, and the most important, and all those things are missing, but the important thing is that there's more emphasis on Zazen. That's taking that time and sitting more I don't know that could be called Americanizing Zen. It certainly has an appeal to me in terms of practicing more the core, the guts of the practice, Zazen, which is the way Corbin's Zazen teacher, once again, whose photos up on the wall in the community room, along with Corbin's father and Suzuki Roshi and the Chino Roshi, other teacher in Japan, his master in Japan, Goto Zawaki said, you know, just Zazen for the sake of Zazen. You don't need anything else. Just sit with no gaining idea. That's quite a long-winded answer, I guess. And I'm not sure it's really an answer, but that's my sense of it as to what Corbin came here to do, what he did while he was here, and what we've done since then. And Joe, I'd be glad to you or Todd or others who've been around enough to have a comment on that, please. It's not a monologue here. Todd?
From what Joe has told me, this manifestation is a form of American Zen. Just this situation, taking it out of the monks into the lay people. I go to another Zendo, and there's an acquaintance there from China that I know, and she doesn't show up for talks with Bai Sangha members. She only comes to the Dharma talks if it's by the Roshi, as she told me. That this is the way it is in China, that it takes 10 years at least for one to be able to give a Dharma talk. I've been, you know, I think it's one of the, it's difficult because I'm an American, you know, so, but I sense it's one of the great strengths of the American Zen that it has taken it out of the mountains of the monks into the lay people. Yet, on the other hand, tradition and structure, as is somewhat loosely, so to speak, practiced here, is grounding, you know. So if I could, I was hoping maybe Ying, you might have something to say of if you've practiced Chan in China, because Zen, from what I understand, really comes from China, Chan, and whether how your sense of the pros and cons or something, or what your reflection on, because you have a unique perspective, I believe.
Thank you, Todd. I only have a little bit of experience with that, and not in when I was growing up there, but more recently as an adult. It's definitely more out of the reach of the lay people. Monasteries are for, you know, people who have committed to it their whole life. And they often go in at a pretty young age. And different traditions are, you know, somewhat different, but they're generally celibate. So the monks and nuns then commit to a life of practice, and they practice for the community. But it's generally pretty separate from household life. But I think now there's a little bit of the permeation or the breaking down of the walls, just like here. There are more householders who go in at an age that's sort of close to retirement, or even earlier, where they can do a period of lay practice. It can be half a year, occasionally shorter. So there seems to be an interest in the lay people to have access to that practice. But from the little bit that I know, that's relatively recent and still not as common as in America here, not nearly so. Most people do not practice and do not know about Chan practice.
Personally, though, you have also a unique perspective, perhaps. Mm-hmm. You can't escape your culture. So I'm curious whether what your if you can expand.
Thank you, Todd. I think Marie's question is interesting, and it probably really applies to all of us. I this American Zen too for me is foreign in multiple ways. So in my years of starting to get to know it, starting from city center in like 2001, I think thereabouts, I was very cautious that it's not my tradition. You know, it's Japanese Zen. And also it's been very established in America for many decades, so I was, you know, taking baby steps to get to know it, and I think for me, because in China it's the threshold to actual practice is very, very high, so I was almost a little bit too cautious in my own past to say, okay, I can practice this, or this can be helpful for me, because I placed it sort of on a very high pedestal. I mean, literally, sort of the threshold. You know, you cross the threshold of a door in China, and I think in many Asian cultures, that's very, very high. You don't do that lightly. So that is interesting to see that now, like more than a decade later, that I probably had a, you know, I placed that myself, and it wasn't necessarily there in American Zen. So I come to very much appreciate how accessible. Or I didn't take the risk. And then to address your question about growing up with a culture, yes, I would say Buddhism and Taoism are very, and Confucianism are very much of my culture, which is Chinese. And Japanese culture, there's a lot of overlap, so I do have a lot of kinship with the Japanese culture, but I'm also very conscious of the differences, and certainly as how it manifests in Zen. But also like a lot of is ideas here, right? I think when it comes to here, indeed, it's, as Marie says, there's no. It's our nature. It's being recognized as who we are, and that is without national identities. You know, we all have an identity of who we are. I would describe myself as Chinese first and American second. But when it comes to this, or especially in nature, then all that goes away.
We're all African.
We're all human beings, or sentient beings.
Thank you.
The question. So who are these Americans that are adapting Zen? Is it you? Is it me? Is it maybe it's Maura? Who adapts it, and what is it they adapt?
What was the question?
Who's adapting Zen? If Americans are adapting Zen, who's doing it?
Who's adapting Zen?
Yeah.
Well, let me back into your question, maybe an answer to reply to it. Coben has said, and it's pretty clear to me, that if we're going to call this Zen, and he would, once again, he'd like to see us drop that word. He told us, I heard him say early in my years with him, do not call ourselves Zen students. It's like the beginning, it's labeling, it's categorizing, and I think one of the fundamentals of our practice is to not label things, not pigeonhole things, to be open. And he would say that if you call yourself a Zen student, right away, that's even back then in the 70s, there was a was a hot word. You know, it, people would have expectations of what they would expect, how they would expect you to behave, or what they thought you would believe, because either you labeled yourself, or somehow they got the impression that you were a Zen student. So he preferred that we be ourselves and practice Zazen, which he described, and I believe it is a very individual thing. The what we often call the practice is when we come together at places that have a name like Jikoji or Tassajara, and there's things we do in buildings, but that is not the core of our practice. We don't have to come together any place with anybody. When the energy arises from within us to sit or stand or walk and be present in whatever we do, you know, we're practicing. And there's no need to label that as any particular kind of practice, a Zen practice, a Chan practice, a Dao practice. You know, people throughout the world do that without knowing that, you know, not having any label for it. They just practice. They live in presence, in acceptance, and so, I mean, there's really no need to Americanize it or Nicaraguanize it or Switzerlandize it. It's to personalize it. I mean, it's to practice it in every aspect of your personal life. And then that's just Joe being Joe, Marie being Marie, Dawn being Dawn. It just... And that's probably as much of a label as Coben would think that we needed to do, is to be ourselves. So hopefully we're all doing that. I mean, if you still use the word America, who's Americanizing Zen, and... But if I take it to, okay, who's personalizing it? I think maybe hopefully we're all, as we mature in our practice, we're all personalizing it and doing it in everything we do all the time. You know, I mean, I've often thought, I don't need to keep coming to sit here. I don't need to keep going to the Santa Cruz Zen Center and sit at noon with Kokio and friends there. Yes, we come together, as Coben said, it's mutually supportive. It helps us regularize our practice when there's a schedule, and we want the support of others to keep on a schedule. It takes more personal discipline to have the pure practice of sitting in whatever posture in any time you're at. But that's the Zen practice really is.
Peter, oh, sorry. I thought you were doing this. Thank you. I'd be curious to your aspect of personalizing it as a park ranger for decades. I'm very interested in how nature and Zen come together for you. Is nature your first practice, or is Zen, and of course they may not be separate, but there still is the outside environment. And when I become mindful in nature, I think the experience for me is a little different than being here, because the sensory information is so much richer outside. So I'd be curious as to like just how you overall how you see it, but also maybe in a detailed Zazen sense.
Zazen is a form. Koban call it the of all the forms might be taken as many aspects of samadhi. Koban did call Zazen King Samadhi. The posture, or at least as close as we can come to the classic full lotus posture that passed down from, they say, even before the time of Buddha, people were sitting in a posture similar to full lotus. Because I had a lot of time to walk for those years on the trails of pinnacles, it was sort of walking samadhi rather than that I would and sleeping. So actually I would sleep outside as well almost every night except when it was raining, or so that being on the earth, walking on or sleeping on it, was more my practice than sitting on it. But it, the confluence of the Zen practice of attentiveness and quietness, I was able to share that with folks that I had the privilege of leading hikes. It was one of my responsibilities, but I was able to get away from or information-laden hikes to attentiveness-laden hikes, so that I could share with others another way of being out in nature, going quietly, taking time to be still, sitting on the earth, being aware of this, what we call the small world that we can see when we slow down. So I was able to carry so-called Zen practice into my role as more like a teacher there than what's traditionally known as a park ranger. But I was an interpreter, so I did give campground talks with song and dance and campfires, and but it was more on the walks rather than in the campfire programs that that cross-fertilization happened. And I have the privilege of still doing that when I go back there as a volunteer and lead similar hikes, or when I have a chance, like I did last night here periodically, and leading hikes or a quiet session at Jikoji with few of the trappings that traditionally come with our sessions here. Melissa.
Thank you, Peter. I just wanted to speak to the experience of the night hike last night. Peter led a group in my organization, and it was extremely profound in that integration of Zen and nature, and just that you said the everyday Zen, not putting kind of like boundaries on the practice, and being able to really personalize the practice for ourselves. And for me, being in nature is so important. It's such a huge part of my life. And it brings almost instantly for me that mindfulness, that connection. And so we did a hike last night, and it was pretty chilly and windy, which people are like, whoa. And what was so amazing was that being with what is. And after a while, it was like people were warming up. It was in that where we're able to shift our mindset and go into this mode of, okay, this is another sensation. And like you were saying, it is, it's so true, your senses just become even more opened up. And Peter was amazing because he would stop and introduce this poetry that was always just like right on at the moment. And when it was becoming more nightfall and we're going into some of the darkness, he really set an intention for us to make the choice of, okay, whether we want to use lights or we want to really be with the darkness. And everyone chose to be with the darkness. And it was like this profound energy. And when we did a closing circle, our reflections, people really shared some powerful, powerful things at times when they realized that they've been able to stretch their own thoughts of what's possible and to realize the potential that we all have. And I just wanted to share that with you, that it was quite a wonderful, good experience. Nature and Zen.
I was about to say for any other question. Well, there's, I just see before we close here that the sun is coming out, and maybe the rain has stopped, and we are, I guess, at least according to the forecast, due for warm, sunny days ahead. But I encourage you, having had this talk, move towards the wonder of being present in nature and outside the walls of the Zendo, carry our practice forward, that after lunch today, take advantage of the beauty that surrounds Jikoji, the many trails. There are maps in the community room, maps of the trails that are nearby, and take a walk. Walk off the delicious lunch that Mike is prepared for us, and then do that anytime, of course, not just today, but anytime you come here. And then maybe we'll have another commune with spring or summer on the schedule before too long, and join us for that. But you don't need to wait for an invitation. Just like I tell the people on the hikes at Pinnacles, you don't have to wait for a park ranger to have a hike posted to enjoy Pinnacles under sunlight, moonlight, or starlight. You just sometimes it takes that initial one to get out there and see that you can do it, like some of the folks learned last night. But it's there for us to take advantage of all the time. We just have to slow down a bit and listen, see, hear. And now it's time to eat. So thanks for your presence this morning, and you close with some.